stolen by a man who will enjoy it personally or sell it to others. So no matter how carefully one hides his hard-earned wealth or tries to protect it, there are those who are expert in finding it and taking it away and stealing it. For example, the tax men, of course, they take it out even before you get it. Before you get your money, your tax is taken out. They are very expert. And then there's other people who know how to take your money away. And they make you think like it's your desire to go and spend your money for the things you don't need, actually. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, wealth accumulated without giving or enjoying is taken by others. So it's like being a miser. You just keep your wealth, you don't spend it, and you don't use it for others, give it to others either. You just hoard it. Another person who is stronger enjoys what is collected by another person, just as a person enjoys honey gathered by the bees. I heard the stock market has been going down rapidly. So those who hoarded their money on the stock market are now losing it at a rapid pace. Somebody told me yesterday that it went down 4%. So that's in one day or something like that. So that's one place where you can hoard your money and you think it's going to grow. But instead of growing, somebody is going to steal it away. And that could be time. It's not time, it's somebody behind it who's got the money, who's taking it away. Because it's not that you invest it, and what you invested in, that's who takes the money. And then you lose if it goes down. So here's a practical example happening right now that people are losing their hoarded money. And they're thinking, oh, one day I'll get all this money and enjoy it. But they're not enjoying it now. Yeah. Gambling, right. Stock market is gambling, right. So we don't do that. But this is an example of how people lose their money, how they can lose their money, which is happening right now. So how can another person understand one has wealth if one hides it? Vishnu says that they know, that they see some symptoms that you have money and then they get it. Now, in verse 16, it describes some people who are actually entitled to take your money. And that is three groups of people, and all under one category as saintly mendicants. Saintly beggars, they're allowed to take some of your money. The brahmachari sannyasis, can enjoy the money of the householders. And it's described in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Haribo, that Kali was given four places to stay. That is where there is illicit sex, gambling, intoxication, and meat eating. And then he was given one more place to stay. And that is where you have a lot of money, just sitting and not doing anything. Kali will come. It will be a cause of quarrel if you don't use your money for Krishna. If you just hoard it and keep it, then Kali will certainly enter. So this is a warning. Now in the 11th canto later on, in the 23rd chapter, verse 17, it describes what happens if you associate with money in the earning, attainment, increase, protection, expense, loss, and enjoyment of wealth. All men experience great labor, fear, anxiety, and delusion. And then later in the next two verses, 15 undesirable qualities come from hoarded wealth. So if you hoard your wealth, these 15 things will come. And this is how Kali comes. Number one, theft. It will be stolen. Number two, violence. It may be violently stolen. Number three, speaking lies. Oh, I don't have that. I have no money. I have nothing. Duplicity, lust, anger, perplexity, pride, quarreling, enmity, faithlessness, envy, and the dangers caused by illicit sex, gambling, and intoxication are 15 undesirable qualities that contaminate men because of greed for wealth. So I've heard so many stories of people who won the lottery and then after they won the lottery, like recently one person, he won the lottery and his girlfriend murdered him for the money. So these people, they don't know what to do with the money. They don't realize that Kali comes. Another man won the lottery and he spent it all on his favorite granddaughter. So she became a drug addict and she committed suicide. And he wished he never won the money. And there another one, he won the lottery and he made so many houses for all his relatives, and then they all started fighting over the houses. Yes. Right. Yes, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying, what happens if you don't use it for Krishna? It is, if you get money and you don't hoard it and you use it for the right purpose, then Kali will not stay. Then you can defeat Kali. This is the fact. So this is the bad example is of the bee who hoards his money. And so we were explaining what happens. But of course, if you are a devotee and you get money, then there's a formula for how to make sure Kali does not come there, and that's to give to Krishna, give a percentage to Krishna. Yeah. Right. Yes. Yeah. You can be. Yes. You can be, but if you know, like a real Brahmana, he will spend it. He will spend it for Krishna. So somebody who is actually Krishna conscious, he will see what's happening to him. You know, if he gets money, then he'll start thinking, okay, I'll build a house here, I'll build a house there. No, I'll use it for some Krishna conscious project. And he'll start think of a project to use it for. Like yourself, you're an artist. You get money, you make pictures for Krishna. So you make something, a very beautiful contribution to the world. So myself, I get money, I print books. I write books, I print them. Before I had no money. So I couldn't print books. Then I got money and now I can print books. So I spend everything for the artist, for the books. So, but if you don't do that, if you think, okay, well now I had no money, now I have money, now I can build myself a house here or whatever. I mean, I'm not a grihasta, so I can't do that. If you're a grihasta, then it's okay. You can build your house here and there. But I'm not a grihasta, so I should not think that way. You have to see time, place, and circumstance. If you have a family, then that's another thing. You do need a house. You do need all these things. And if you don't have anything that, like me, then no need to spend on these things. And so we have to be intelligent, see our time, place, and circumstance, and see how it's affecting us also. I know, you know, my husband got his inheritance, and he didn't spend it for Krishna, and he lost all of it. So, yeah, and then came back to devotional service. So it was Krishna being very merciful and taking everything away, which happens. I mean, it happens. Then I know another devotee who became very rich, and she's using her money in Vrindavan for a lot of projects. Her name's Chandi. She's using her money for fixing Keshi Ghat, for helping the people and the Brijbasis and the animals in Vrindavan, giving medicine. So you can use it properly. Alfred Ford building Mayapur Temple. There are nice examples, many nice examples amongst our God brothers and God sisters of how they're showing how you can use money for Krishna if you get it. So that is there. And so with every wrong thing to do, you can see the right way to do it too in Krishna consciousness. So with the, yes, you can use your sight, see the beautiful form of Krishna. You can use your smell to smell the incense. You can use your touch to eat prasadam. And so we'll talk about the different, how did Prabhupada exemplify this quality of, did you have a, yes. Uh-huh. About
duplicity.
Yeah, duplicity is when you think one thing, you say another thing, and you do a different thing, all three different. That's duplicity. Honesty means is that You say what you think and you do what you say. Now, a duplicitous person will think one thing, he'll say another, and he'll do something else. Nothing will be in line. So he'll have like two or three different personalities. One person for here, one person for there, one person. So in front of you, he may say very nice things. When he goes behind your back, he'll say bad things. That's duplicity, like that. So duplicity can come from having money. Like, you can be a poor person and you want to make friends with a rich one. So you may do so many things to show that you're his friend, but actually you just want the money. And rich people have that problem. They don't know who's their real friend. We know, because we're not rich, so who is our friend? So how did Prabhupada exemplify the quality? And Chanaka Pandit says, whatever money you have, it will be spent. Now here's the positive side. Either the money will go from you, or you will go from the money. So better you spend it for the best thing, and that is Krishna. So how did Prabhupada exemplify this quality? When he came to the United States, he kept a diary. He wrote down every single penny he spent. So he was using everything for Krishna. He was walking many times. He didn't even go on the bus or the subway. Now, again, Prabhupada did take money, as I explained with Brahmananda in the early days. And also, Brahmananda and Gargamuni's mother came to see Srila Prabhupada, and she came to complain. And she sat on a folding metal chair. Everybody was on the floor in those days. Chairs were unheard of, but she got a chair. So she asked Prabhupada, what are you doing with my boys? And Prabhupada said, oh, I'm taking care of your sons. I'm feeding them, looking after them, providing. Actually, we have no income here. Maybe you would like to give some donation. So she looked at Gargamuni and Brahmananda, and she looked at Prabhupada. She said, donation? I've already given a donation. I've donated my sons. So that was Prabhupada in the early days. Yes.
So I think maybe it was in Calcutta, were you there when Palika was there?
I was there when Palika was there, yeah.
And she said once she had this really worn sari with holes.
Oh.
Prabhupada saw.
Yeah. Yeah. Same thing happened to me in Calcutta, too. When I was pujari, and Prabhupada called my husband and up in front of the Vyasa-san to thank us. He said, thank you very much for decorating the deity so nicely. And I was trying to cover all the holes in my sari, too. And he didn't say anything, but 4 days later, one of the richest men in Calcutta said, I'm taking you to all the sari shops of Calcutta, and we're going to get some saris. Ever since that time, I never have any problem for saris. Ever since that day. Another time a sari shop owner said, come and take 20 saris. And that it was interesting because that time Lakshmimoni and her girls were visiting Calcutta. So it was I could give a sari to each girl, you know. I had enough 15 for her group and some for me. And it was cool. It was nice. But I have this problem now. I have too many saris, like in India. I mean, here I only keep three, but in India, it's, yeah.
I think also in Los Angeles, after the North Asian Soul, Manjuali and Shilapati were showing for the deities, and Prabhupada, he told them, oh, it's Tungabhadra.
Wow.
But also there was not enough money to buy, I think maybe Manjuali was the one who said we don't have enough money to buy cloth for the deities and decorate them beautifully. So Prabhupada said, I will give it to you. So he took from his own personal
Right.
He gave money for
Right.
The
So that's wonderful. Prabhupada gave money for the deity's Rukmini Dwarakadi. She was telling the story just now. So, yes, we can understand how Prabhupada had all the qualities of these 24 gurus. He was teaching by his example how to worship Krishna. So our next guru is the deer. He's captured by karma, by sound. The hunter comes and he plays the horn, and the deer runs to the sound and he's captured. He's shot. So the lesson is not to be attracted by mundane sound, mundane music. I was just discussing before class with Lakshimoni, and we were talking about this example that now one scientist in Japan, he has looked at the crystals of water, and he's compared crystals of water. If you play beautiful music, or you say nice words, or even chant Hare Krishna, the crystals are very beautiful. And if you do dissonant sounds, rock music, and harsh words, angry words, the crystals of the water become distorted and broken. So just imagine what happens to us when we hear mundane music, when we hear this. What happens to the cells in our body, what happens to our ears, what happens to our heart when we hear this mundane music. With plants also, yeah. And the plants, they thrive on the beautiful sound of chanting, and they shrivel and die when they hear the bad sounds. That's Indian scientist Bose, he did that, yes. Mm-hmm. Right, contaminated water.
Yeah, contaminated water. Actually, if you chant mantra, you know, I understand that I read this a few years ago.
Right.
And if you, it can be changed by sound.
By sound, right.
So, of course, you know, when they do the ashram, they purify
the water. Right.
Actually, and also, if you do an offering, you offer water.
Right.
It changes,
yes. So just see how Krishna consciousness includes everything. If you offer the water, if you chant spiritual mantras, everything will change. Yes? Mm-hmm. Whatever. Hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good. Yes. So we learn from our dear guru not to associate with mundane sound. Spiritual sound will purify us, will liberate us, will make all of the cells in our body harmonious, and it will take us back to Godhead. So let's see how Prabhupada exemplified this quality. He spoke over 1,000 lectures while traveling the world 14 times. Gurudas said, "Oh, Prabhupada, you say everything perfectly." And Prabhupada said, "That is because you hear perfectly." So classical Indian music on Air India, March 25th, 1973, Shukirti was on the airplane with Srila Prabhupada, and after 8 months, he said, of being his personal servant, "I thought I had a good understanding of how to act and what to say in response to his questions, so as not to get me into trouble. I considered our relationship was strictly spiritual master and servant. Over time, though, it became apparent that Srila Prabhupada wanted me to speak freely and honestly when he asked a question. He was very kind. I never felt he put me on trial. One day, as Srila Prabhupada and I entered an airplane on Air India, Indian classical music was being played over the intercom. We walked to our seats. As always, Srila Prabhupada took the seat by the window and I sat down beside him. The music continued. "Do you like this music?" he asked, smiling. I stared at him with an empty glance, thinking, how can I tell him I like this music? Sure, it sounds nice, but there's no chanting of the Lord's names. It's only instruments playing. That can't be Krishna conscious. Speculating fearfully, I missed my opportunity to be intimate with my loving spiritual master and said nothing. "This music is very nice," Srila Prabhupada mercifully said. I felt like a cheater, unable to be honest. I was so concerned about the outcome of my answer, I forgot Prabhupada was a person with likes and dislikes. He heard the music and remembered Krishna. I heard the music and calculated it was Maya and wondered how to answer in a Krishna conscious way. So when we were new devotees, everything was Maya, you know. It was like there was very little that was Krishna. I mean, there was Krishna was there, but if you go outside, then everything was Maya. So we're trying to widen our vision here, broaden our vision, by seeing many of the objects that we see every day, the sky, the earth, the water, the fire, and how they are related to Krishna. And they are not Maya. So the power of spiritual sound, I'll tell the story that some of you may have heard already in one of the Bhagavatam classes. They told me they told this story, but I'm going to tell it again. I won't tell it exactly as how I remember it. Indradyumna Swami was on an airplane recently, and he was flying in Africa, Durban, South Africa. And the plane was coming into land, and every time the plane would try to land, a huge gust of wind would come and blow the plane violently, shake it. So he would be shouting, Hare Krishna, and there is a Christian shouting, Jesus, and a Muslim shouting, Allah. But next to Maharaj was an atheist. And so the plane would go down and then it would go back up. It would just have to go back up. It couldn't land because it was so violent, the wind. Again, it came down and shaking, and everyone was chanting the Lord's names except this atheist next to Maharaj. Swamiji, I don't believe in these things. I believe in science. So after the fourth time, the atheist started shaking. And look, he turned white, and he looked like he was about to vomit. And he said to Maharaj, what are you saying? So, Hare Krishna, tell me the whole thing. So he taught him the whole mantra. The plane went back up. So the next time the plane came down for a landing, the pilot before, he said, he made an announcement. He said, now, it's very difficult to land. I'm going to try one more time. And if we don't make it, we're just going to go back to where we came from. So they tried one more time, plane was shaking, the atheist was chanting Hare Krishna, and the plane landed. So Maharaj said to him, now do you believe? And the man said, maybe. And Maharaj said, here's my card, if you want to discuss further, you can call me up. So that's the power of spiritual sound, that even the atheist wants to learn about it. Of course, then Maharaj said, there are no atheists in the foxholes. So that's a saying which means in the war or when you're faced with death, then there are no atheists. Everyone cries to the Lord. So the lesson of the deer, the lesson of the fish is the last of our senses. It's about the tongue, controlling the sense of taste. So the fish, incited by desire to enjoy his tongue, is fatally trapped on a fisherman's hook. So a foolish person is bewildered by the extremely disturbing urges of the tongue and is thus ruined. So we all know that. We sing Sharaya Vijajal every day. And we eat prasadam, and that controls our senses. So if we use our tongue, our eyes, all our senses and our money in the service of Krishna, then our money becomes an offering, the body becomes a temple of the Lord, and each of our senses become illumined with knowledge. So the lesson of the fish. How did Prabhupada exemplify this quality? Now, Prabhupada would give different instructions at different times. So listen here to opposite instructions about prasadam from Srila Prabhupada. Here's from Nanda Kumar. There was a time when I was feeling physically challenged. Ghee and sugar and some of the general fare seemed too heavy for me and would make me sleep or get sick. When I ate light foods, I would be healthy. Devotees told me, that's Maya. If you take prasadam, Krishna will bless you. Whatever you get is just a tiny fragment of your karma. Devotees eat prasadam and they get the mercy. They don't worry about health food. Whereas now, this was in the time of Prabhupada. That was philosophically sound, but practically speaking, if I ate a light diet, I served better and had a clearer mind. I asked Prabhupada, I understand the principle of accepting Krishna's mercy by taking prasadam, but when I eat light, it's easier. When I eat heavy, it's difficult. What should I do? And Prabhupada said, well, if you're Rupa Goswami, you should just take prasadam. But if you're a neophyte, which all of you are, You have to decide what is good for your devotional service and what is not good for your devotional service. So he let him eat light food. Another time when he first came to New Zealand, there were these two sannyasis who were like, no sugar, no this, no that. And Prabhupada came and he had these big, huge gulab jamuns, and he was just eating right in front of them. And another time with them, he asked for some sweet, and there was no sweets because there was no sugar. So he had his servant go out and buy some sugar, and he said, just make me some puris. And he was dipping the puris in the sugar and eating the sugar in front of these two health freaks, devotees. Now here's another one where he says the opposite instruction, Brahmananda, from Brahmananda Prabhu. In Montreal, there is a devotee, Dayalani Thai, who is a yogi and was into health. He strongly criticized our diet, white rice, white sugar, butter. At that time, Prabhupada was in Montreal, and I used to walk with him to his apartment. One day, Dayalani Thai was complaining to Prabhupada about how our food was not healthy and how we're all going to get sick. Prabhupada stopped walking and said, you see Brahmananda there? He's been eating this food for so long. Does he look sick? And he was very big and healthy at that time. Not too big, but very healthy looking and very strong. Now, of course, he has old age, so it's different, but in those days he was very strong. So here is another one about prasadam. This was in 1973, Bhaktivedanta Manor, Shutikirti. Prabhupada and his disciples, they were often invited to a life member's house for prasadam, for a feast, actually. And the disciples were always eager to attend it, so they would, because they would get Prabhupada's association as well as opulent prasadam. Shutakirti says, I don't remember Prabhupada ever refusing an invitation. Sometimes he gave short lecture before prasadam was served. One such gathering took place when Prabhupada was staying at the manor. Several dozen devotees went to an Indian gentleman's house. The prasadam was very opulent. Devotees, Prabhupada used to say, devotees should get sumptuous prasadam, simple but sumptuous. Sumptuous means very tasty. If the prasadam is tasty, you can go on eating even if you're not hungry. And if it's not tasty, then you'll immediately lose your appetite. Prasadam must be very nice for the devotees and everything else will be all right. Opulent prasadam means ghee and sugar. So at the feast, there was halava, sweet rice, puris, and many other preparation. I watched Prabhupada eat. It was always special. Normally he took prasadam alone in his room. I cannot do him justice trying to describe the heavenly way he moved his fingers, hands, and mouth as he ate prasadam. But even I could see he was honoring Krishna prasadam. We all ate to our full satisfaction. When we returned to the manor, Prabhupada rang his bell. I trotted to his room and offered obeisances. So, everyone has enjoyed prasadam, he asked, smiling. Everyone has enjoyed the feast. Well, actually, Prabhupada, some of the devotees, they are not feeling well, I said. They are saying everything was fried in oil instead of ghee. Well, what do you expect, Prabhupada said. I was watching them. I saw Pradumna, he ate so many puris. And another devotee, he ate so much of the vegetable. I was amazed. I noticed Prabhupada eating. I had no idea he observed so much. He simultaneously did so many things without ever appearing to do anything at all. However, I had an observation of my own to offer. Yes, Srila Prabhupada, I agreed, but I also don't feel well, and I didn't eat very much. Yes, Prabhupada said, I know this. You didn't eat so much, but I do remember you ate 4 puris. And so then, yes, Prabhupada, I guess I did, I answered in disbelief. I offered my obeisances and left the room, trying to figure out how he knew all this. He knew more about what I ate than I did. So then it was remarkable to me how he was so aware of everything that was going on around him at a simple function. So then here's a very famous story by Shutakirti on the South American Venezuelan Airlines. Maybe some of you have heard this story. Once a stewardess was passing by and said, oh, this man looks very wonderful. So one time Prabhupada was sitting, and the next was Shutakirti and Paramahansa Swami after that. So they were traveling to Mexico, from Mexico City to Caracas, and he said, I hadn't prepared any prasadam, but just before we boarded the plane, a Vaishnava Indian lady handed me a bag filled with puffed rice that she had made for the trip. All right, let's take Prasadam, Prabhupada said shortly after takeoff. Do you want what is being served on the plane? I asked. No, no, we have our Prasadam, that's all right. I didn't ask for a plate. I simply put the tray table down, unwrapped the aluminum foil, and placed the puffed rice before my spiritual master. He immediately started to eat. Although it was a small portion, he only ate about half. Without even looking at me, he said, all right, now you can take. This was the nectar for which we were always anxious. Prabhupada always took great care of his entourage. This quality was one of many I greatly appreciated. On this flight, as always, Prabhupada sat by the window. I was in the middle. So I took the aluminum foil and split it down the middle, gave half to Paramahansa Swami, kept half for myself. We were happily eating Prabhupada's remnants when a young stewardess who was walking down the aisle looked at us and spontaneously reached past Paramahansa, placed her hand in my Mahaprasadam. Grabbing a fistful, she tossed it into her mouth. Oh, this is very good, she exclaimed. What is this? It's puffed rice, I said, trying to keep my composure. It's made from rice. Prabhupada looked at her with a broad smile. Ah, this is very good, she stated. I'm glad you like it, I said, still a little shocked about what she had done. Are you having anything else to eat? She inquired. Well, we're vegetarian. Unless there's some fruit, we can't have anything. I will go up to the first class section and get you a basket of fruit. So then she returned with the fruit, knives, and again asked, is there anything I can get you? So turning to Prabhupada, I asked, Prabhupada, would you like some milk? Yes, hot milk, he said. Okay, I told her, you will have hot milk and we will have some as well. So she quickly went to first class and came back with the hot milk. Srila Prabhupada lectured many times about super soul in the heart. However, I never experienced his presence before that day. I was convinced only super soul in the heart of that stewardess could have inspired her to act in such an unprofessional manner. Sometimes devotees would offer me money to get Prabhupada's prasadam. I never took it. They begged for the opportunity to render personal service, and here is this flight attendant boldly going where no one had ever gone before by the mercy of Krishna and his pure devotee. So there's a footnote, of course, to this incident, that the devotees were doing book distribution in South America in some village. They went to the door, opened the door, and there are all these pictures of Krishna, and here is this lady. She said, yes, I got the prasadam of your spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, so I'm chanting Hare Krishna, I'm reading the books, and I'm a devotee. So Prabhupada's maha was very powerful. And she knew it. Somehow she just took it. Yes. So this is the wonderful power of eating prasadam, and the opposite, if you don't eat prasadam, you will get captured. Yes. Uh-huh.
And I was serving the halva.
So you were serving the halva at the Sunday feast.
All the old devotees.
Yeah, I know. All the old, like me also. No halva, please. Thank you. I know. It's something.
In the beginning, we used to eat so much
halva. I remember. We used to eat so much halva, but now it's forbidden. Yeah, we talked about change of body the other days. In our classes, we learned about change of body and what happens when it changes to old age. Except for Gadagrash here. He can eat everything, but the rest of us are not so fortunate. So, our next guru is Pingala, the prostitute, and she's going to teach us a very interesting thing, detachment from sense gratification. So, it's very surprising that a prostitute is going to teach us that. But let's hear what happened to her. She was living in Videha. She was standing outside her door one night, showing her form, wanting money, but nobody was stopping. So many people, and she was thinking, oh, this one will stop, but then pass her by. And so she became so morose. And finally, she just became detached, and she said, okay, anyway, doesn't matter. I should just forget about it. And she felt great happiness. When she just gave up all hope and became detached, she was very happy. So one thing the verse pointed out was great suffering leads one to the path of enlightenment. So after a night of failure, she was lamenting, actually, and she got some realization, oh, why didn't I try to please the Lord by loving service? Instead, I'm serving insignificant men who only bring unhappiness, fear, anxiety, lamentation, and illusion. So she said, now I will finally pay the price of complete surrender. When the Lord is pleased, one develops detachment and gradually comes out of hopelessness and becomes indifferent to the world. The Lord is the real source of love and happiness. So how could Pingala become so detached so quickly? There is actually a secret, because our guru, our Avaduta here, he is observing, he's learning from 24 gurus. So in order to learn from Pingala, he must have been there. So the truth is, he stayed overnight in her courtyard under a tree and observed Pingala. And she did some devotional service because she saw this, here's a saintly person, I will clean up my courtyard for him. And she offered, okay, you can sit over here. So because of that, Agyata Sukriti, she became detached. She knew this was not another one of these people, this is a sadhu, and she respected him. And because of that, she became detached. So I'm in Ireland. One of the devotees who went out for book distribution told me about one man who met them on book distribution. He said, you know, the happiest day of my life was when I bought a boat. Because in Ireland there are many rivers and lakes, and a lot of people have these big boats and they come. In fact, our island, our temple is on an island. The only way you can get to our temple in Inishrat, Ireland is to go by boat. There's no, you can't go by car. So when we see many people going up and down in their big boats, this man said, the happiest day of my life was I got my boat. And then, you know what the next happiest day of my life was? When I sold my boat. Because it gave him so much misery to maintain, to take care of. Then this is the nature of material happiness. There's three categories of material happiness. You aspire for something and you don't get it. So then, misery. That's the first category. So there's a lot of people, they want something, but they don't get it. And then the second category, you aspire for something, and you get it, but it doesn't live up to your expectations. It's not what you thought it was going to be. Misery. Then there's a third category. You want something, you get it, it lives up to your expectations, and then you lose it. And that will happen to everybody at the time of death, if not before. Yes, so this is the nature of material life, material happiness. Not so for spiritual pleasure. So what we learn from Pingala is detachment. Now, Prabhupada also talked about this Agyata Sukriti, like Pingala, she served Dattatreya, she gave him a nice place to rest for the night. And Prabhupada talked about that. He says if somebody comes in our temple, they consciously or unconsciously offers obeisances, he immediately gets a credit note. And when you get so much credit, we get a whole bunch of credit notes, a big amount, what you can purchase something. You know what you purchase? Krishna, yes. If you get enough credit in your spiritual bank account, you can purchase Krishna. And this whole Uddhava Gita, these verses are coming from Uddhava Gita. I taught it last year. So the essence, essential teaching of Uddhava Gita is to understand the difference between the material and the spiritual, the eternal and the temporary. What is the difference between the eternal and temporary? The whole Uddhava Gita is about that. And then at the end, there's a wonderful verse, one of the last verses, in which Lord Krishna tells Uddhava, this process is the supreme intelligence of the intelligent, the cleverness of the most clever, for by following it, one can, in this very life, make use of the temporary and unreal to achieve me, the eternal reality. So first we see, okay, this is temporary, this is eternal. But what the teaching is, you take this temporary and you trade it in for the eternal. So we have a lot of temporary. We have our body. We have so many things that are temporary. But if we trade it in for the eternal, then we can get Krishna. And there's in the purport, not purport, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says a devotee is the most intelligent person because he knows how to trade something temporary for eternal. I remember a few years ago they used to have cash for clunkers, for cars. You have an old clunker car, you could trade it in for a new one and pay some more money. And they would give you like $4,000 or $5,000 just for that old car, if you had it for 3 years. So we got our clunkers here. We have our bodies, which are all clunkers in one way or another. And we want to trade it in for Krishna. And Krishna is saying you can do that. So here it says people born in Bharadvarsh, we're all born in Bharadvarsh because Bharadvarsh is the earth planet, are mortal, born in low families. They offer to me their bodies, not worth a penny, deformed, afflicted with old age and disease, but they attain me, the ocean of sweetness. Accepting their offerings, I, who am supposed to be the cleverest out of joy, give myself with my priceless ornaments, bracelets, and crown to the devotees. So how to trade in your body and get Krishna? That's the question. So what this means is use your ears for hearing Krishna Katha, use your tongue for speaking and eating prasadam, use your nose for smelling the incense, use all your senses for Krishna, and then Krishna will take your body and give himself to you. Isn't that nice? So that is also the lesson of Pingala, trade in the temporary for the eternal. How did Prabhupada exemplify this quality? He was detached, and he was equal to everyone. Karandar was remembering Prabhupada's qualities. He says, I didn't know who was Prabhupada or who he was. He was kind and nurturing, and that's what attracted me to him. Prabhupada gave us the attention and patience that our parents were unable to give us. Prabhupada was a father figure, and we were children who needed tolerance. He was practical and sensible, and he was dedicated to his mission. He was alone. Although he told us how much we helped him, we were at least as much trouble and gave him as many headaches as we did any service. But he was centered. He carried on with his mission despite all the hassles and turmoil that we provoked and generated. So again, Prabhupada was detached. He was equal to women. He engaged us also in Krishna's service. Mula Prakriti talks about a conversation she had with Prabhupada. Prabhupada told her, in this age, it's actually a benefit to be a woman. In Kali Yuga, things are so degraded, people don't trust men. Hardly anyone will allow a man to come up to them or will open their door if they knock on their door. And when Prabhupada, he said, when I was young, there was a company who was selling this hair oil, Brahmi hair oil, and they took respectable young women from good families and they sent them door to door, and everybody opened the door and bought the hair oil, even though it was never proved it had any good qualities. So now Lord Chaitanya is sending nice young women to help the poor conditioned souls go back to Godhead. This is his plan. So we are part of Lord Chaitanya's plan. And so the last thing about this quality of detachment is it's very important not to waste time. So Shrikirti was writing to Prabhupada after he left, please forgive me for wasting so much time in the service of illusory energy. Sometimes in a lecture you would look at your watch and say, it is impossible to recover this moment in time ever again, no matter how much money you have. Like I remember some lectures, now it is 7:30. You cannot buy back this time, even with $1 million. And Shrutakirti said, I was thinking, why is that so bad? We're eternal. What's the loss of 1 second of time or 1 minute of time? Now, as I sit here with emptiness in my heart due to your absence, I have a little idea of how valuable each second was in your presence. So when he would say that, we never thought he would leave. But yes, you cannot buy back this time with me, actually, is what Shrutakirti got. No amount of money can bring you back to this most unfortunate soul. So this was Shrutakirti feeling the bittersweet taste of separation. So our next guru, we heard from Pingala, detachment, and from the hawk, that is detachment from circumstances, and the hawk, detachment from possession. There was a bird, a hawk, a small hawk. And this is, now we've gone into the 9th chapter of 11th canto. Once a group of large hawks who couldn't find anything to eat attacked another weaker hawk who was holding some meat. At that time, being in danger of his life, the hawk gave up his meat and experienced actual happiness. So that's like in Vrindavan, when the monkeys attack you. And you have some prasadam, and you give the prasadam to the monkeys, and you feel great happiness. And the monkeys leave you alone. And that is the process. If you are in Vrindavan and you have any sort of plastic bag in sight, best not to keep it if the monkeys attack. Better you give it to them peacefully. Usually what you do is you scream, you drop the bag, and you run. And the monkeys take it. One time I didn't want to do that, so I had some nice prasadam, and I just forgot. I forgot to put it in my shopping bag, and there the monkeys were, and I was trying to figure out what they're going to do. Like, I was looking at, there were three monkeys in front of me, blocking my way to my house, and they were passing me by, and I said, okay, I'm safe, they're passing me. Well, one passed me, but the one that passed me jumped on my back, and the other two started growling in front of me, which means, give us the prasadam. So I didn't want to give it. So I screamed top of my lungs, Krishna! And they left, you know. He jumped off my back, the rest backed off, and they respected that. You have to chant with quality. Yes.
Last year when I was in Vrindavan doing parikrama, yeah. Around Navadar,
oh, yeah.
There were two Indian ladies in front of me.
Yeah. Yeah.
The lady's handbag jumped up onto the wall and up on top of the building.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, the boys, they go out and try and barter with bananas. This guy opened up her purse, and he took out the wallet, he started throwing the money everywhere, and he took out her mobile phone.
Oh, yeah, they like mobile phones. I must tell you, they've upgraded.
Yes.
Sometimes they like to chew it. Yeah, yeah. No, I must tell you, the monkeys have upgraded in Vrindavan, so you have to be careful. I was in Lloyd Bazaar, and one guy lost his glasses. He was on a motorbike, and then there was a whole crowd. The monkey had the cell phone. So you're not safe. You cannot use your cell phones in front. No, no, they'll take... You know, no, now it's food and shoes, it used to be. But now it's cell phones also. Bead bags also, beads. Be careful.
I said that monkey, you might want to take that phone.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they're trained, I think. They are trained.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. So, beware. The lesson is, but don't fight with the monkeys. Let them have it. But if you can really chant pure Harinam, then they may let you go. Like you're going to die. You have to chant as if you're face to face with death, and they may, like I did, and they let me go. Krishna. Or Radhe. Radhe also works.
This lady was just crying and crying because her credit cards, every rupee...
Oh, she was a tourist.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well...
Some real detachment she had to learn.
Yeah. Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai. So one lady lost everything. The monkey took her purse, threw her credit cards, threw all her money in the air, and her cell phone he kept and took it somewhere. Okay, so be careful when you go to Vrindavan, when you're with the monkeys. So, from the hawk, we also learn that attachment to things in this world makes one miserable. And if you give up such attachment, one achieves happiness. How did Prabhupada exemplify this quality? Now, this is the quality of illusion, that people are attached to things. So he was on a morning walk in Oakland, I don't know where that is. He passed a small zoo with a large sign in front of it that read, Children's Fairyland. Oh, Children's Fairyland, Prabhupada read. Pointing to the skyscrapers, he added, Adults Fairyland. So, huh? It's next to Berkeley, California, okay. And I was told there's a sign when you go into Hollywood, the movie capital of the world, now you are entering into illusion. Welcome to the land of illusion. At least they know it. So now here's another thing, another positive thing that Prabhupada said. 5:30 in the morning, Prabhupada called me into his room wanting to know why Shyamasundara and Pradyumna were still sleeping. I don't know, I replied. Prabhupada told me to bring them to his room. When we returned, he told us we must conquer over sleep. Rising early and taking a cold shower is not austerity, just common sense and good hygiene, Srila Prabhupada said. Then, revealing a wonderful truth, his divine grace told us, by chanting 16 rounds, following the regular principles, rising early, reducing one's eating and sleeping, one gets spiritual energy. If one follows these guidelines for 12 years, all he speaks will be perfect. Speaks. Whatever he speaks will be perfect. So just try it if you have 12 years left. I don't know if your life, a lot of us are old timers here. But maybe, I don't know if it's 12 years in a row, but we maybe if we add up all of, in our 41 years, maybe we'll find 12 years where we did that. I don't know. Now it's becoming more challenging. Especially the cold shower part. So, the hawk, we've had already five gurus and we have an extra one today, and that is the child. So let's see who we've heard from today. The honey thief, deer, fish, pingala, and the karara bird, or the hawk. So pingala taught us detachment from sense gratification, and the hawk, detachment from possessions. And the child will teach us simplicity. So the child is happy due to ignorance. But in that way, he's similar to a saintly person who is happy due to surrendering to the Supreme Lord. So Prahlad Maharaj is the example of a simple child who was also a devotee, a saintly devotee. And he was always thinking of Krishna, always being embraced by the Lord. He didn't know how his bodily functions were being carried out. Sitting, walking, eating, lying down, drinking, and talking were automatically being performed. So Prabhupada said that a small child, a baby, he doesn't know how he's being taken care of, how he's eating. He's just happy to be on the lap of his mother. So Prahlad is just like this. The necessary activities of his body were performed without his knowledge. So just as a father and mother take care of their child, Govinda cared for Prahlad Maharaj, who remained always absorbed in thoughts of Govinda. So in the 9th chapter, verse 4 of 11th canto, two types of people are free from all anxiety, a childish fool and one who is a saintly person who has transcended the modes of nature, who is in love with the Supreme Lord. These two types are free of anxiety, and everyone in between is suffering. So the four Kumaras were like children, they were like that. And so from this child we learned simplicity. Prabhupada had a very childlike nature at times, and Sri Kirti appreciated that. He said, for pushing on Lord Chaitanya's movement, you forcefully did the needful. As a pure devotee of the Lord, you have no attachment to the fame and adoration that was constantly bestowed upon you. For this reason, you are worthy of it. So when Prabhupada would go on the airplane, Sri Kirti said, traveling with Prabhupada was always an incredible adventure. He never felt the need to conform to any social convention. On airplanes, he used the bathroom when the seatbelt light was on. He took prasadam on takeoff when we weren't allowed to have our trays down. If anyone said anything to him, he ignored them. They would then turn to me. I can't stop him, I would say, shrugging my shoulders. They inevitably realized they were no match for a Vaikuntha person and walked away. So again, in St. Moritz, we talked about that yesterday, snow lay on the ground as far as the eye could see. The hotel had a central lobby with an elevator, and our lodging was a spacious three-bedroom condominium complete with a kitchen. The large living room had sliding glass doors leading to a veranda with a fantastic view of the snow-covered mountains. By the standards of many, it was breathtaking, but not to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada was very regulated. Never mattered where we were, his life continued like clockwork and his schedule remained constant. One morning, Prabhupada put on his warm saffron hooded coat and prepared for his morning walk. We will go for a walk, he said. Shall we see how cold it is? Since we were on the ground floor, His Divine Grace opened the sliding glass door to walk on the veranda which led to the great outdoors. Suddenly, a whistling blast of wind, ice-cold air, filled the entire condominium. It was blizzard-like. Whew, this is much too cold, Prabhupada exclaimed with his eyes open wide. Whenever I witnessed these childlike expressions, my heart melted with joy. Srila Prabhupada exuded the innocence of a child. While most disciples experience his powerful, determined preaching, I felt fortunate to see Prabhupada's face light up with endearing, intimate expressions. We will walk in the hallway inside the building, he said. A little arctic blast wasn't going to interfere with Prabhupada's morning walk. So His Divine Grace Pradyumna and I headed for the hallway. This presented a different set of problems, though the resort was designed to operate with very little energy waste. When the hall sensors detected someone's presence, the lights would turn on for a specific amount of time, then quickly turn off again. As we walked up and down the corridor, we were required to push various buttons along the way to keep the lights on. Otherwise, we would have been walking in the dark. Pradyumna went back into the apartment. Prabhupada and I continued to walk, and I ran from button to button, pushing and chanting. This went on for about a half an hour. This cold weather has given me an appetite, Prabhupada said. You go in and make me some halava. All right, Srila Prabhupada, I replied, still concerned about the button pushing. Do you want me to wait until after your walk, or shall I go now? Prabhupada humorously retorted, no, I will walk. You can go make the halava. So we always loved when Prabhupada had an appetite. It was a joy to cook for him. When I went in, I said to the others, Prabhupada is still walking in the hall. Someone needs to go out and push the buttons to keep the lights on for him. We all peeked out the door to see Prabhupada chanting, walking, and pushing the buttons to keep the lights on. It was quite humorous. Jai Srila Prabhupada. So another about simplicity on a morning walk in Perth, Australia. Going on a morning walk with Prabhupada was never dull. Sometimes His Divine Grace wouldn't say a word, chanting japa throughout the walk. This disappointed some disciples who did not often get such an opportunity. They sometimes asked a question, hoping Prabhupada would engage in a debate or conversation, but this was risky business. Srila Prabhupada was never subject to our whims. Sometimes he gave a short response to such questions and continued to walk in silence. One day, however, Prabhupada was in a talkative, humorous mood. Is a devotee simple or crooked? He asked, smiling. He is simple, Srila Prabhupada, one disciple answered. Are you sure? Is he simple or crooked? He again asked with a rascal-like gleam in his eye. Yes, a devotee is simple, the disciple enthusiastically responded, not realizing he had fallen for a trick question. Srila Prabhupada then sprang the unexpected punchline. Actually, the devotee is crooked. Everyone stood there with their mouths gaping. Take me, for example. I came to your country and everyone was eating meat, taking intoxication and doing so much nonsense. I tricked everyone. I've tricked all of you into becoming Krishna conscious. So in that sense, the devotee must be crooked because he must be able to trick, just like I have tricked everyone. No one wanted Krishna consciousness, but I have tricked you. Prabhupada was the acharya. He taught us by example, and again, on the morning walk, he demonstrated the art of tricking us. The trick question. So the last one on the simplicity. Pradyumna remembers that Prabhupada said, your phone rings all the time. It's a nuisance. In India, someone doesn't call before they come. They just show up at your door and say, and you say, yes, come in. Our Indian philosophy is open door, open window, open mind. This is our philosophy. We do not like to be blocked in. That was simplicity of Srila Prabhupada. So remember, we have six gurus today. You can choose one of them and try to apply it to your life tomorrow before tomorrow's our last class in the 24 gurus. Not seeing the elements of this world, the things of this world as objects for our enjoyment, but as our shiksha gurus. So our six gurus, the honey thief, we learn not to hoard, better spend for Krishna. And the deer, don't be attracted by mundane sound, control your sense of hearing. The fish, don't eat non-prasadam. Pingala, detachment from sense gratification. The hawk, karara bird, detachment from possessions. And the child, simplicity. So any questions or comments or additions on today's class on these 24 gurus? Tomorrow will be our last class. We will hear from our guru is the young girl, the arrow maker, the serpent, the spider, and the wasp. Tomorrow. Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. Thank you for coming. I know there's many more out in cyberland or radio land or whatever it is listening, and it will be posted on the website, all the lectures. So if you want to get them, download, you can. Hare Krishna.